Live. This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoane. J. Crew announced recently that it was making clothes for women in size 000 or extra, extra, extra small. While the company says it was trying to appeal to a petite Asian market, critics say the move was just another example of vanity sizing, making customers believe they are buying size 6 when in truth is probably size 12. While sizing can be confusing for women, it doesn't always make sense to men. So today on Radio Times, how size influences shoppers, how manufacturers make sizing decisions, and why the size you wear doesn't say much about the size you are. And we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Maria Faust is Assistant Professor, Program Director of Fashion Merchandising at Philadelphia University, co-author of a book called Designing Apparel for Consumers, The Impact of Body Shape and Size. Mariev, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Ed Gribben is with us as well, president of Alvinon, and that's a clothing fit and sizing consulting firm. They have compiled a database of 400,000 human 3D body scans, and he actually wrote a chapter in Mariev's book. And Ed Gribben, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So, Mariev, how tiny is 000, this new J. Crew brand?
Well, if you look at their measurements on the website, I think they have a waist of 23 and a hips of 33. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's close to that. It's very, very small, but the labeling doesn't mean that much for anyone today because, as we were saying, if we go back in time, that could have been maybe another size label a few years before. So I think it's all about this vanity sizing, as everyone talks about it. It makes you feel good. And in the same way, it's natural. You're going shopping, you're having fun, you're enjoying yourself, you're with friends, you want to treat yourself, you go in the store, you don't want to have a label saying, oh, by the way, you gain weight. So that's not appealing. So vanity sizing got its way through. I remember when we got to close to zero, we were saying, oh, what's going to happen when the label's going to be zero? And now we're at triple zero.
Zero, zero, zero. And what I heard J. Crew say is our sizing runs big, Asian market runs small. And obviously a lot of these companies, these big name companies, they see a global market, not just an American market.
Well, if you think about it from a retail standpoint today, there's no growth in the United States. They're not going to open more stores, and their growth is 1% maybe. So they're looking to emerging markets. China, number one, eventually India, Brazil. And so there's a real push to move into those markets for Western and especially U.S. brands and retailers. The populations there are quite different. So they're going to be sizing.
So they are smaller.
They're physically smaller. They have different body shapes, much straighter body shape, less definition than Western body shapes. So as most brands have moved into China over the last 10 years, they've started doing what J. Crew does. They put smaller sizes in. They relabel their sizes as being smaller. And that hasn't worked successfully for a lot of people. So there are a lot of major U.S. companies that have developed a specific Asian fit now, and that seems to solve the problem for them. But J. Crew is, I think, being honest and forthright in going into this and saying, we know we need smaller sizes for that market. But frankly, they need them for the U.S. market as well. We have a huge Asian population in the United States. We have a huge petite population in the United States. And my daughter is one of the big fans of this triple zero coming out.
Because she can wear it?
She can wear it, and she loves it.
Mariev, you talk about vanity sizing. I think we need to explain to our listeners what is meant by that, vanity sizing.
Oh, well, I think when we talk about vanity sizing, we mean that we are designing the garment, the same maybe measurements as they were before, but instead of labeling them as we used to, like maybe a size 12, one would say Marilyn Monroe was a size 12. Well, if we look at today's world, labeling, sizing, numbers, we would say she would be a size maybe 4 or 6, which she has the same body measurements, but the clothes would be labeled smaller. So with time, again, it's nice to be maybe big and tall for men, but for women, it's not something appealing. So we played with the numbers, or the manufacturers and the retailers play with numbers, putting them smaller and smaller to the point that we got to zero.
Yeah.
So,
and I can speak for all women here, and it's great to go into a store and say, oh, I'm a size six. Wow. Right?
My point of view is that the industry does not really vanity size. They don't consciously do that, but they've been looking, brands and retailers are focused on growing in their target demographic, and the numbers don't lie. Over the last 30 or 40 years, we've gotten larger as a population, and so manufacturers have increased the measurements, the base measurements of their sizes, to go along with what they perceive to be the actual growth of the body in the population. And what that does is it has basically made all sizes larger, and brands are not going to put any more sizes on the shelf. So what happens is the smaller person gets disenfranchised. They can't find a size that fits. I spoke with an NPR reporter recently, Viet Le in Washington.
Oh, sure. We know Viet. And he used to work here, actually.
He called me because he had a question about men, small men, buying boys' size clothing. And we talked about that. But if you're a small man or woman, you're somewhat disenfranchised by this shift in sizing, which is really meant to accommodate the fact that we're getting larger as a population.
One of the arguments, I guess, about vanity sizing, Mariev, was that designers or clothing manufacturers do this to sell more clothes, so that if you think, oh, instead of a size 14, I'm really a size 8, there's a greater chance that I would actually purchase that item because I can say to myself, hey, I'm a size 8 now. Is that, in fact, true? Do we know?
Well, it seems to be true. Of course, I'm not too thrilled about that because as a researcher, we like to have the real numbers. We would like to have a pictogram. We're working on a new label. We're working on presenting new labels to consumers, but it seems to be very appealing to consumer. And there are some phenomena that existed and that are still there today. Like Ed just mentioned that there's a lot of petite. Yeah, it's true. If you look at the American population, 48% of the women are less than 5'4". But if you look at it on a demographic point of view, like Ed said, we have more and more people coming from other countries. Mm-hmm. So we have more Asians, we have more Latino, and we have an older population. So no, my mother is not getting taller because she's getting older. So all these other, like if we look at the demographic, yes, it's true, we have 48% that are petite, and petite is very flattering. So vanity sizing,
just the word or the thought of it, right?
Yeah, of course. If you're petite, it's kind of cool to go shopping if you're petite, I would think. But that doesn't mean that you're small.
That's if the industry actually makes petite sizes, and that's another issue, because many brands and retailers over the last 20 years have actually cut back on petite. And there was a huge thing on ABC News about 5 years ago where Saks Fifth Avenue dropped their petite department, and 6 months later were forced to bring it back.
Wow.
Because of customer dissatisfaction.
Well, I know some petite people who are frustrated for that very reason and resent having to go to the children's department to try to find clothing to wear.
Well, if you think about this, they basically say petite is 5'4 and under. But the average fit model working for a brand, or they're 5'7 or 5'8.
Right.
So that's what they start with. And even if they make something 2 inches smaller, shorter, they're catering to someone who's 5'5 or 5'6, they're still not serving the true petite market. Now, there are a handful of people out there who really are doing a good job of that, but they're very few.
I mean, what I'm hearing from both of you, what are you doing? You just lifted your leg. Go ahead, Maria. What are you doing over there?
No, I was just showing because I said it all comes into the length of the pants afterwards. Oh. So you could have this. We don't have any correlations between height and weight and girth. So at the end of the day, if you're, as Ed was saying, your fit model is 5'7", well, then the pants is very difficult to adjust for someone who is shorter.
Well, you know, I have to say, the more you're talking, the more I'm thinking it is really hard to size clothing. And we're talking about height, we're talking about weight, we're talking about length of leg, we're talking about ethnicity. I mean, all these factors that have to go into figuring out how to size a dress or a pair of pants.
I joke that I learned everything I needed to know about sizing and fit in my first job, which was in a uniform company. And we have to not only fit everybody who works for a particular company, like a United Airlines, we have to make them look professional and look good. So the way we solved that problem was we built 192 sizes. We had a pattern system that had 192 different sizes accommodating four different heights, three different body shapes, and then size 4 through 20, et cetera. And having that permutation allowed us to do that. And we could do that because we were contracted to do that. A typical fashion brand or retailer can't afford to do that. Right. You know, if they could, they would have one size fits all, and that doesn't
work.
They'd
be done with it, right?
So they want the fewest number of sizes they can possibly have, yet fit the broadest number of people. And if you just think about how diverse we are, if I just asked everyone in this building who buys size 6 to come into this room, you would see a wide range of body shapes and heights who buy the same size. So that's really what the challenge is.
Maria, going back to you, and I know that you have looked at labels and are trying to make labels, I guess, be more full of more useful information. If you could design a label for a piece of clothing, what would it include?
Well, at this point, we're working on something like that. We're starting a new research in Canada this August with teenagers, most of them being teenagers. We know they're a big market over there, all around the world, and it's very tricky for them to get the right label. So I would like to have a pictogram, but a pictogram is only a figure, and it's a two-size figure.
Two-dimensional, yeah.
Two-dimensional figure. I would like it to have in 3D, but we're not sure yet how we're going to have it in 3D. I would like to have the shapes being on it, but at the same time, we all know someone who has a pear shape. We all know someone who's more kind of an hourglass, which is probably me, of course. When you think about yourself, you see yourself as being the one who is the perfect shape. And all of you, the other people around you is, oh, she's a pear shape, she's an A shape, she's a... So it's very difficult. You don't want to be the one labeled when you go shopping being, oh, I'm the one who fit the...
Oh, so if you had a picture and it was a pear shape, you're saying even if that was their shape, they wouldn't want to buy that, right?
Not too many people retest it. And of course, everyone perceived themselves as being the hourglass, which is okay. So we're still, it's a working process of, okay, what should be on the label? So we have few people that are working on it, and we have very clever idea, I could tell you at this point. And it's going to be probably completely different than SML, and it's not going to have these numbers that we're familiar with. Some people argue, well, how are we going to be recognizing ourselves into that? I think we'll learn very quickly.
Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about clothing and sizing, and our guests are Maria Faust, and she's Program Director of Fashion Merchandising at Philadelphia University, Ed Gribben, President of Alvinon, and that's a clothing fit and sizing consulting firm, and his firm has a database of 400,000 human 3D body scans, which I want to talk about after this very short break, and we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Association for Public Art supports WHYY and announces Magic Carpet, July 16th through August 17th. Philadelphia artist Candy Coated transforms the Oval into a magical environment of color, pattern, illusion, and movement. Visitors are transported into another world with colorful sandboxes, 3D illusion art, and more right on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. Magic Carpet, July 16th through August 17th. More information at associationforpublicart.org/magic-carpet.
This Week in This American Life.
No, shut up. I'm going to talk. You're going to hold us hostage for 5 hours.
There's people playing a board game called Diplomacy. And after David failed miserably at the Diplomacy World Championships last year, he came back this year with an actual diplomat, former Mideast envoy Dennis Ross.
Maybe one of my roles is just to sort of pump you up. You're doing okay. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Come on.
How they do
this week. Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Retirement is part of the American dream.
Live life your way at Laurel Lake Retirement Community in Hudson. Enjoy a custom-designed home with country club amenities.
But some seniors are moving into RVs, traveling the country looking for work. The new Okies of the Great Recession, next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Ed Gribben and Maria Faust about sizing and about how we see our bodies and why sizing seems to be different today than it was a generation or two ago, and also how manufacturers think of sizing as well. And again, we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moscoane. So, Ed, tell us about these human 3D body scans that you have filed away in a database.
Well, we started using this body scan technology about 10 years ago now to put scanners in malls and ask people to come up, and we'd give them some information, like what sizes they are in different brands, what brands fit them best. And every time we put one of these in a mall, we get a huge number of people who want to volunteer to give us their information. And we keep this data anonymously. And we can sort and slice and dice it by ethnicity, age, lifestyle, household income, a whole variety of factors. So most brands and retailers don't try to cater to everyone. That's why different brands fit differently. So a brand targets working women ages 25 to 40 years old, or women ages 50 to 65 years old, and suburban versus urban. When they define that demographic, we can go into that database, and we've got data now, I think, on 26 different countries, and help them figure out what is the best size 6 or 8 or 12 for their target customer.
In fact, you were telling us you just did this in South Africa, which is interesting.
That was fascinating.
So what were your findings there?
Well, in South Africa, there are five major ethnic groups, and the retailers all perceive that these ethnic groups have vastly different body shapes. What the research found was that there are some differences, but the differences aren't as obvious as you might think. And coming up with a couple of different fits in their clothing lines will accommodate those ethnic differences quite well. Levi's, about 5 years ago, worked with us to develop Curve ID, which is probably the single most successful product launch in Levi's history, and it's geared towards addressing different body shapes in the population. And their demi-curve, slight curve, and bold curve has been a huge success, but it's based on identifying in their target demographic those different shapes and then building products to fit them.
Well, and I noticed, Marieva, someone I like to wear blue jeans a lot, is that the blue jean part of the fashion industry seems to be trying to figure out how to cater to all these body sizes and body parts even. Is that true?
Yes. I think research have shown that the bra industry is very difficult to adjust. The jeans industry, when we looked at how many pair of jeans do you have to try before you find the one that fits you well, that's a big, big issue in the industry. We work with ready to wear, and we know that it's not necessarily ready to wear as it was like perceived before, although jeans are supposed to be the one that you fit in and it has to fit like a glove, like
yes,
we say.
Yes, I noticed that.
And it's very challenging for whoever wants to try a pair of jeans. So Levi's, the new design for Levi's is very nice.
We have an email, or actually a Facebook comment from Nell. I'm 5'1". There are certain stores which have increased their sizing so much in the past few years that I can no longer shop there. That's kind of picking up on what we were talking earlier about, you know, small size people in a desperate search for clothes that fit.
Well, the interesting thing, when brands take their basic size, most start with a size 6 or 8, and then they grade down and grade up from there. Most of them make their sizes taller as they get bigger, and so if you that length increase is really challenging for most consumers, because as we get bigger, we don't get taller. The average person who buys the smallest size is the average height, and the average person who buys the largest size is the average height. So that's a challenge, and we work with a lot of brands and retailers to help them use the data to understand that. But the people who are shortest and the people who are smallest, and that's they're the most challenged. And they make up a huge percentage of the U.S. population today. And and the industry's not really addressing that. This triple zero is a step in the right direction, I think, to help address that. But if they had a triple zero petite, that would be even better.
Oh, do people, though, and we touched on this earlier, but I'm back to you, Mariev. Do people really know their size? You were talking about how people don't want to identify with a pear shape, even if they are. But do they know their size?
I don't really think so, because we survey a lot of people when we do these kind of research. We ask them how they perceive themselves, what type of waist do they think they have. And it's very challenging even just to know, where do we measure our waist? Is it where we bend? Is it the smallest point? Some people are more straight, so they don't even have the smallest point at the waist where we think it is. So when we ask people, do you know what's your waist size and your hip size? Most of them, they don't know. And then if we measure them, they're really surprised. But I don't think it's something that we really want to know neither. Like, we have a scale in our bathroom, and do we jump on every morning? It's not...
Not in my house.
Well, so sometimes it's like we just don't know our body measurements, and that makes it even more difficult to do our shopping.
Yeah, Ed, go ahead.
I agree that consumers don't know their body measurements, but one thing that we've found in our research is that consumers have this number in their head. So I speak to audiences a lot, this especially resonates with women, but when you walk into a shop and you see something you like, you don't pick up the first one. You look through the pile or the rack for your size. And people have a number in their head, and they think, oh, I'm an 8. That's the one I'm going to look at. And they make this immediate judgment about the brand. If the 8 doesn't look like it's going to fit me, I put it back and walk away. I'm not going to pick up a 10.
Oh, because I'd rather be an 8 and forget the brand. Go ahead, Mariette.
That's interesting. That was my first research when I started my master's degree years ago. That was my first research, looking at people going into the fitting room and how many of them would pick two sizes of the same item, same color, same item, and would come out of there, and how many would put these items on the shelves back and not. And I think it has a bigger impact than what we are just thinking as a consumer, because on a retailer's point of view, while 40-something percent of them choose to bring into the fitting room two garments of the same items, but different sizes.
Different sizes, right.
Yeah. And then it has a huge impact also for the retailers, because we never calculate how much it costs for the retailers to put them back on the shelves to be sold or to be if it's catalogs or online, how much does all of this cost at the end of the day? So that's a little bit why I think it's very challenging, and we should have more information on the label that would guide better the consumers.
Or some kind of standard sizing. I mean, wouldn't that solve the problem, Ed? I mean, I realize that designers are probably thinking, no way.
There is a standard, and our company contributes to that. It's called ASTM, and they are the international organization.
Mari, I've just held her head when you said that, but yes, go ahead.
They just had a conference recently where Mariev and I both spoke, and the interesting thing about that is the industry believes that they're special. Everyone has their own target demographic that they're focused on. So they look at the standard and they say, well, that's too generic. That's for everybody. My customer is not everybody. My customer is this demographic. So I'm going to specialize. And we think that if more people followed the standard, they would be better off in terms of developing a more consistent product. The one thing that consumers want and expect is consistency.
But they're not getting it.
They're not getting it as often as they really would like to get it. And that's why retailers have so many returns, both in-store and online.
Well, we're talking about sizing. We're talking about vanity sizing, perhaps even downsizing. And again, our guests are Ed Gribben, president of Alvinon, and Mariev Faust. She is program director of fashion merchandising at Philadelphia University. I wanted to shift gears here slightly and get Jane Schuer in on our conversation. She's a family therapist in Philadelphia with an expertise in eating disorders and body image. And Jane Schuer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Do we have her? No? Yes? No? Yes. Jane, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Yeah, Marty.
We've been talking about sizing and vanity sizing and how for a lot of people, focusing largely on women, but I think it's probably true for men as well, how size seems to matter. And as someone who works with people and body image, do you agree with that?
Absolutely. People measure themselves from the time that they're really young based on numbers. It starts at school, and it starts on as we can remember what size we were, and traveling up through the ages as we become teenagers, it becomes even more important. And we measure our self-worth and our sense of identity based on those numbers, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, you say why? Because just sort of like weighing yourself every day, that number seems to matter too much?
Well, it isn't a good idea to weigh ourselves every day because that's a great way to increase our anxiety and a major factor in determining body image satisfaction and the ability to be realistic and accepting of ourselves and work accordingly really depends on lowering our anxiety.
And if you're going into a store you see you're a certain shape and you can get into a size 8, you sort of feel that sense of accomplishment?
Well, it can be. And certainly the advertisers have seized on a formula that unfortunately works. And the formula is the more that they can get their audience to feel inadequate and dissatisfied with themselves, the more we as consumers are going to spend our money and want more and more products. So our spending habits go up, they get fat, and we get more anxious and become more hooked on spending.
Well, let me get Ed Griffin to respond to your comments, Jane Schwer.
Well, I think what's happened is the industry knows that we're all getting bigger as a population, and over the last 25 or 30 years, they've increased the specifications of what a basic size is pretty much across the board, and it's allowed people to be the same size for a long period of time without having to buy the next size up. I actually think that helps a person's self-esteem. And as you mentioned, Marty, when you walk into a shop and you're typically a size 10 and you can fit into the size 8, you actually feel pretty good about yourself. And you may intellectually know that, well, this may be vanity sizing, but intellectually is one thing, emotionally is another, and you feel pretty good about it.
You want to add to that, Tamari Evan, and then Jane, I'll get back to you.
Well, I think it's true. It's absolutely true. The opposite side of that, which is the downside, I would say, was when we're thinking, as adults, I think we could assume ourselves. We could say, oh, that's really a crappy day. I'm wearing a size bigger than I thought I would. But as for teenage and young women, I think it has a huge impact on their self-esteem. I'm working more and more with the self-esteem about the sizing today, which before I was more on the 3D data. Today, yeah. I'm more looking at that, and I think I agree. And I think it's very difficult for young women's self-esteem to be not the one that has the smaller size, so...
Well, in our research, I've actually found that women under the age of 25 don't really care about the sizing. They'll take a size, they'll take two or three into the fitting room, and they want what looks great on them. And they don't really care about the label as much as women over the age of 25.
Huh.
And, you know, it surprised me a little bit, but talking to my daughter and my daughter's friends as they were teenagers and college students, it kind of bore out that the size, the whole vanity issue was not an issue to them. And whereas women who are a little bit older like that idea of getting into a certain size.
Jane, what do you think about that?
I don't, the research doesn't reflect what I see in my office and what I see with young women across the board. I think that they're very much focused on how they fit in and how they measure up. And so on every variable as their focus, those numbers of the clothing and whether they fit in juniors or preteen or women's sizes absolutely matters to them and has an impact on whether they're feeling good about themselves or whether they're feeling less than.
Well, we could do a whole hour on this, Jane. I'm going to have to say goodbye to you, but just final question to you, which is then, based on all the things you just said, how do we develop and maintain a healthy attitude towards our body?
Great question. And I think it really is a practice of accepting that we all have real bodies that are genetically determined, that 70% of our body is really genetically determined, and that we have to practice more positive regard and acceptance and looking at the health and well-being of our bodies, and that advertisers need to give more positive messaging about the diversity of real bodies so that all these sizes correspond with more positive messaging.
Well, on that note, as always, Jane Shore, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And she's a family therapist here in Philadelphia, continuing our conversation with Ed Gribben and Mariev Faust, and with you at 1-888-477-9499. Mariev, I have noticed in some advertising, we are beginning to see some women that look like actual women. They're not these little stick figures in clothing, but actually have a little weight on them.
Oh, I think we did a lot of progress with the last decades or so, and even a little bit more. I mean, I remember when I started, we only talked about Twiggy. And today, when you think of Crystal Rain, as for example, when she said that she would no longer be anorexic, she saw so many mannequins dying because they were just like too skinny. Now, she wrote in her book, she says, one day I ate chewing gum and I was wondering at night, was it really sugar-free?
I mean, that
was like just terrible. So she says, no, if they want me as a model, they'll have me as a model as I am. And Jean-Paul Gaultier did a really great job with her. So I think that is changing. Although what I would say is when I moved to America, I remember showing statistic about ethnicity, and Ed talked a little bit about that and how we are different according to our ethnicity. This is like in our bodies. And I was told, well, you know, in America, it's not politically correct necessarily to show it like this. So, but I think if we would have more, as you said, spokesperson that would be from different figures and different ethnicities, and that would be representative what we are selling. Because at the end of the day, what the real retailer wants to do is to sell things and to make people happy about what they're wearing and make the clothes fit to your size and shape.
Ed, go ahead.
We talk about the different kinds of fit that are out there and in the industry. And there's technical fit, which is how the product is actually made. And there's aesthetic fit, which is what the designer wants it to look like. And the marketers and the merchants in the retail world will try to make that product look as attractive as possible to sell it.
Right.
But behind the scenes, those technical teams are building them to pretty realistic body shapes. And on the back end of our business, we're the largest maker of fit mannequins in the world. And so we provide these mannequins to all the factories that produce the clothing. And I can tell you that these mannequins are very realistic. They're not like these stick figures. And so there is a little bit of a disconnect because they're showing one image in their advertising and marketing, but they're building to a more realistic image when they build a product.
That's progress.
I think that is progress.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. I also want to get some more callers in on the conversation. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Open Sky Energy, a solar energy company, supports WHYY. Open Sky Energy helps homeowners and businesses explore whether solar is the right investment in a relaxed and informative way. More at openskyenergy.net.
Have I stayed away too long?
On the next Fresh Air, Dom Flemons, a former member of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, performs in our studio. His new solo album includes old-timey music, blues, early jazz, and some originals. Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
You know, love like a poor child. Is this what they mean by a good guy with a gun?
A woman named Anna Marie Yoakum was found dead, shot in her home in South Bend, Indiana. She had been shot 3 times, apparently at close range.
A profile of the NRA's general counsel and the surprising skeletons in his closet. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
At WHYY, we're looking to better serve our listeners. Starting Saturday, August 2nd, some of our programs will start 1 hour later. To see the new lineup, visit whyy.org/fm. Thanks.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Maria Faust and Ed Gribben about how size influence shoppers, how manufacturers are making sizing decisions, and why the size you wear doesn't say so much about the size you are. I want to play a clip from Seinfeld, and in this clip, George is with his girlfriend Susan talking about the size of Jerry's blue jeans.
You know, I really like those new jeans Jerry was wearing. He's really thin.
Not as thin as you think.
Why? He's a 31. I saw the tag on the back.
The tag, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something about that tag. It's no 31, and let's just leave it at that.
Well, what are you talking about?
He scratches off a 32, and he puts in 31.
Oh, how could he be so vain?
Well, this is the Jerry Seinfeld that only I know.
You want to comment on that? We haven't really talked about men, Ed.
No, it's interesting. Most men, if you ask them their waist size, they'll tell you their trouser size or pant size.
Right.
And they think they equate. And 25, 35 years ago, they did. A size 34 would actually measure 34 inches. Today, a size 34 measures about 36 or 37 inches, partially because pants are not always worn at the natural waist. They're
right.
Worn a little bit lower.
And because there's a little, what, pot belly at the waist?
A little bit of a pot belly.
Okay.
And most men are a little less concerned about the appearance of fit as opposed to women. They're more concerned about comfort. And men are also creatures of habit when they shop. So if I buy a size 32, I'll buy a size 32 forever. I just wear it lower and lower if my belly gets bigger and bigger. And we see a lot of that. You just have to walk down the street to see that.
Indeed. What about shirt size? I mean, if let's say someone is a 15 and a half, 34 or something like that. Is it 15 and a half, 34
it's
for a man?
It's slightly larger because it's meant to fit a body measurement of 15 and a half. So there's a little bit of ease around the collar, right. And a little bit of ease in the sleeve length. But typically dress shirts are made to more exacting specifications than trousers are. Trousers have a little more ease and flexibility built into them today. And part of that is nodding to the fact that we're getting larger as a population as well.
And I was reading the average female size is about 14 to 16. She has a 37-inch waist. The average man is 5'9". He weighs 195 pounds, and his waist is 39.7 inches.
That's correct. And,
that's correct.
And 55% of those average guys actually buy size 34.
Ah, even though their waist is 39.7 inches.
Exactly.
Wow. Let me get, looks like Letitia to join us. Letitia from East Falls. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
As a petite, I often alter my own clothes, and I also do a lot of sewing. And one thing that I've noticed is that while sizes differ between clothes companies, the pattern sizes appear to be more consistent. I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about that. Then I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Letitia, thanks. The pattern sizes, if you make your own clothes, she's saying are more consistent than if you actually go into a store and buy clothes. I'm looking at you, Mariev.
Yeah, it's probably true because, as we know, the manufacturers and the retailers today, they're expanding all over the world. So they have these specifications, this spec sheet that we call. They send them in different manufacturers. And sometimes when it gets to the person at the other end of the world, I remember my students in Hong Kong, sometimes they were saying that it just can't be. Cannot be. There must be a mistake in the sizing. And you have to tell them, no, if the specifications are this, well, that's because of this is the size that they have to fit for. So sometimes it's not because they want to do it badly or wrongly, but it just appears to them not being possible.
Right. Well, interestingly, 35, 40 years ago, most of the fashion schools taught pattern making, and there were many pattern makers in the United States. As we have outsourced over the last 25 years to Asia for most of our manufacturing, 97% of the clothing sold in the U.S. comes from other countries. We've lost that pattern making base. And Leticia's question is a good one, and it's probably accurate, but the engineering that goes into pattern making was an art in America, and it's no longer here. We're working with the Council of Fashion Designers of America on a fashion manufacturing initiative where we're helping to teach pattern making skills to manufacturers in New York. And it's a wonderful program designed to not necessarily bring the industry completely back to America, because we don't think that is practical, but it's meant to shore up the manufacturing that we have in this country and make it more accessible to people.
And there's an interesting, I guess, short history of sizing in this country, coming from the WPA to statisticians trying to figure out what we're sizing. I think they came up with 27 different sizes, something like that.
Shelton and O'Brien, 1941.
Yeah. Very famous, right, in your world, right?
Yeah, it's interesting that Shelton and O'Brien study became the basis for what is today ASTM, and what that standard was managed by the government for many, many years, first by the Department of War, Department of Agriculture, Department of Commerce, and then it finally went to the ASTM. And the industry now weighs in on that and participates and says, well, what should a size 8 be? And twice a year, this committee meets and looks at that. And the standard has gotten significantly larger over the years, and that's another reason the industry has made product larger. It's not, I don't think it's conscious vanity sizing as much as it is an acknowledgement of the fact that our bodies are much bigger than they were in 1941.
The ASTM is the American Society for Testing and Materials. And, Mariev, every time Ed says that, you roll your eyes. Why don't you like ASTM?
Oh, no, I do. I do. Okay, I think they did a great job. I have few things. Like Ed mentioned about this sizing survey that was done in 1941. It was published in 1941. So they surveyed during 1939 to 1940 10,000 women. Well, if you read the reports very carefully, you find out that at that time, and it goes with the logic of the time, they survey 10,000 white Caucasian American women. So that doesn't represent the population of today. And then they create the standards based on very simple statistic, and we don't have the actual numbers behind. We have the result. Like Ed has some scan that he got the data from. I do have some data as well, but we don't have it from this national survey. And then based on that, they say, well, we'll do an average and we'll do the labeling according to that. So we're like 60 years later and we're still adjusting it. Like, okay, maybe we should increase, like Ed said, but it's not. We do have today some much more data, rich data, that we could scrap, I think, everything and start from zero.
And start over again.
But it's a question of who's going to start it.
Sure. Let me get to Faith from, looks like media, to join our conversation. Hi, Faith. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Hi.
Hi there.
I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I am the mom of a 23-year-old who suffered from anorexia for 6 years.
Oh, dear.
And is still battling. And
sorry.
So, yeah, and so this is an important issue to me, and I feel that, you know, for 10 girls who might, you know, fit into a size 000, there might be no problem except for one or two who are predisposed to an eating disorder. And, you know, in my field, I'm an advocate and an activist, these are the people I see, same as the therapist who was speaking, and it's devastating. I've had my own body image issues that took me years to get over, and if I wasn't a two, my day was ruined. My life was, you know, my worth, my self-worth was based on the size I wore, and it took my own daughter's eating disorder to kind of awaken me as an adult woman that I needed to do a lot of work on body image and self-image. And so, and it's, you know, the eating disorders are really rampant now, way more than ever before, because of, you know, if they're predisposed and they're putting their worth into a body size,
sure,
they're in big trouble.
Well, you know, Faith, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We don't have Jane Schur with us to respond directly to your question, but I think you raise an important issue, which is that, I'm sorry.
I was just thinking of the Dove advertising when they say we're all different. And I think we have to promote that more and more. We're all diverse. We're all different. We all have different body shapes. We know that today. We agree on that. I think we have to kind of, you have brown hair, you have like blue eyes, you have like a different body shapes. And that's the biggest issue. We don't want to have girls being anorexic. I don't think that's a...
And this is a complicated issue that often requires a lot of intervention and a lot of self-examination, as Faith is saying as well. And I don't know if you want to weigh in on that as well.
I think we're so influenced by celebrity culture in America today, and I think that that's a huge influence on the fashion industry. But I think the celebrities of today are generally more diverse than celebrities may have been 20 years ago. I mean, if you just turn on Entertainment Tonight, you see women who don't look like stick figures. And I think that there's a more realistic assessment in popular culture today and presentation of the diversity in America than there was previously. And I think that that's a good thing.
Faith, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Kate from Doylestown has to say. Hi, Kate. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I just want to thank you for taking my call.
You're
and
welcome.
For discussing this topic
sure.
as well. Kind of dovetailing off of what your last caller said, I have also recovered from eating disorder. I'm just out of college. And I just have seen a lot of trends online about how more realistic models are, you know, being promoted both in terms of mannequins and in terms of photography and advertising. But I was just wondering if that's a minority trend or if there is more social responsibility that's going to come out of the fashion and advertising industry and what your experts might think how
sure.
the trend could be turning.
Kate, thanks for the call. Yeah, Ed, looks like you want to jump in there. Go ahead.
I think those are two different things. Unfortunately, the advertising industry may not be in sync with the actual fashion industry. The fashion industry, I think, is becoming much more realistic. But how they communicate and advertise to consumers to create an appeal around their brand is a different mm-hmm. story. So I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there between what they say and what they do. And the more we can bridge that as an industry, the better off we'll be in terms of addressing these types of issues.
Well, as you said, the mannequin in the store isn't necessarily what the picture in the advertising looks like.
Correct.
Right? Mariev, do you want to add to that?
Well, I think we did a lot of progress and having shows like this one where we could talk about it, I think that really helps a lot for the industry. I think it's amazing how much progress we did since the mm-hmm. last few decades. Ed was saying we have more celebrities that are more curvy, we have more spokesperson that are different, and they accept the fact, and they promote it. I think we did a very, very good job in changing the model from Twiggy to what
to
we are today.
With a little more meat on her. Kate, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Ed, going back to you, can you, though, imagine, I mean, I'm thinking of your body scans, which I guess is sort of like going through the airport, the TSA. Does it look like something like that?
It looks very much like that. It's a very similar technology. People in the scanner don't have to get undressed.
Right.
And we don't actually take a picture. We actually just collect data, like X, Y, and Z coordinates, and convert those into measurements and shape characteristics. And so that we can identify in a particular demographic, you know, what is the average height, bust, waist, hip,
right.
and what are the shape characteristics that a clothing manufacturer needs to consider when building a dress or a jacket or jeans.
But wouldn't that be good information for a consumer to have? I mean, to have all the, whether you like it or not, all the statistics at your fingertips,
It's a great question,
figures.
And there are about 12 different companies out there, all startups trying to help people with online shopping, and some of them you can body scan yourself with a Kinect X-top Xbox converter,
oh, really?
Some with an iPad, some with a cell phone, and you can scan yourself and supposedly get your correct sizing in various brands. Now, none of these are commercial yet, but we follow all of this research, and it's pretty interesting, and I think there'll be a point when you can scan yourself at home and figure out your size in any different brand and buy it online right from your TV.
Wow. Did you want to ask something, Maria?
I was just going to add that when we started with 3D body scanner, that's not too long ago. So at the beginning of 2000, it was like maybe almost $500,000, and then it dropped to $100,000. Today you could buy one for less than $10,000. And then I'm pretty sure, like Ed said, one day we're going to have some in our own room and at home, and we're going to know, be familiar with right. our body measurements.
So when you shop online, you actually end up getting the right size, right?
That's the whole goal.
We can't take any more calls, but I see just about all the callers that we have online are petite. They're looking, they're 5'2", they're 5'2", one weighs 90 pounds, one has a 25-inch waist. So perhaps, Mariev, there is a market for this 000 clothing that J. Crew is selling us.
Yes, there is a market, but we have to be very careful because, again, there's no correlation between height and girth and sizing that we have on the label. So petite is one thing, very, very small, very thin is another thing. I do believe that it's kind of still the exception. A lot of people are focusing on the very, very petite. But we do also know that the, especially the American population and everywhere in the world, we're getting a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger.
We're almost out of time here, Ed, but we haven't talked about small, medium, and large, and extra large. What should we know about that?
Well, that's another hour.
That's a whole other hour. Can you squeeze it into 30 seconds?
Sure. Most people base their letter sizing or alpha sizing on a combination of two numeric sizes. The problem is that the industry doesn't use the same two sizes. So a medium could be a 8-10, it could be a 10-12, it could be a 12-14. And so the consumer doesn't generally know that, and that's the industry could do a much better job of marketing what their medium means, and I think that the industry is starting to do that. But there's a lot of discrepancy between alpha sizing in the market, and that's more confusing than helpful in many cases.
Well, on that note, we have to end our conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Ed Gribben, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And he is president of Alvinon, Marie-Ève Faust. Thank you very much as well.
Hi, thank you so much.
You're welcome. She's program director for fashion merchandising at Philadelphia University. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for those phone calls, and thanks for joining us.